And welcome to this Student Congress lecture series. At this time, I would like to introduce a young man who has been extremely active on your behalf this year. He's chairman of the Student Congress speaker series and vice president of your Student Congress, Mr. Dave Foley. Dave.
Thank you, Dean Black. Today, as part of our speaker series, we're privileged to have James Meredith with us. I'll give you a little background on him. He was born in 1933 in Kosciuszko, Mississippi. I hope I pronounced it right. In high school, he wrote the winning essay for the American Legion contest, which was entitled, Why I Am Proud to Be an American. In 1951, he entered the service and spent his last 3 years in Japan, where he left at the rank of staff sergeant. After that, he attended Jackson State College, and it was there that he applied for the entrance to the University of Mississippi. He entered the University of Mississippi in September of 1963 and spent 3 years there. Afterward, he studied in Nigeria and traveled widely through Europe and the Middle East. Currently, he is studying for a law degree. Last summer, he began a voter registration march in Mississippi, which attracted national attention. Last night, he was nominated to run for the Republican seat of in the House of Representatives, currently held by Adam Clayton Powell of Harlem, New York. And this causes some anxiety because we've been kind of chasing around with Huntley and Brinkley and the Today Show trying to get him here, but he did make it. And so now I present to you Mr. James Meredith.
Thank you very much. You all are going to have to give me a little time to get used to this forum because something just feels strange with me in the pulpit. Especially the kind you have to walk up two or three steps to get into. There are a few corrections that I could make. In addition to the pronunciation of the name of my hometown, but we won't bother to do that. I'm also going to have to get used to this light, but we get used to it in a minute, I hope. First thing I would like to say is that this is a lecture, not a speech, and some of the more interesting discussions may take place in the question and answer period, which I've been requested to have and which I'm very glad to participate in. First, I'd like to read a quote from Theodore Roosevelt, one of our great presidents. This quote has been with me long years, and it's played not a small role in my life. It is not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. I think that quote is a very appropriate one for today, and I read that for you. Because what's going to happen in this country as regards racial peace, the racial problem being unquestionably the number one problem facing this nation, those who are in the arena, those who make that decision and take a step and make an act, are the ones who are going to decide, not those who sit around and wait for the others to do and then decide whether or not they like it. This is particularly important and is being seen because it's men such as Lester Maddox, who is becoming the governors of the states, men like Beckwith, who are becoming candidates, and Beckwith is the man that was accused of assassinating Medgar Evers, but he's now a candidate for lieutenant governor of the state. So it's the people who make their stand that are going to decide this racial question and the future of this country. So now I would like to express some of my views on this question of racial peace in America. Number one, I think that America is going to have to realize that the Negro is people. The Negro is a human being, an individual. Most whites and too many Negroes look upon the Negro as a group, as a thing, an object, a thing that you can study, observe, speculate about, and everything else, and then come up with some plan, a conclusion as to what should be done with it, for it, or about it. The Negro is a human being that bleeds when he's cut and hurt, when he's wounded, just like everybody else. And until America realizes this, it's going to be very difficult to come even to the point of really seeking a solution to this problem. Who is to blame for the Negro problem? I had a very interesting thing happen yesterday at the news conference. I had to break up a fight between two television interviewers for two major networks in this country. One was a Negro, one was white. And the white came in and the Negro thought that he broke up his interview before he was finished. And he said that for many years he'd been in the business and it always happens. It was quite a scene. But placing the blame is a real important consideration. At least the American people have given it a very great consideration. You listen to any white, I shouldn't be so broad and general. You listen to some whites, and you would get the idea that the Negro is the cause of all of his own troubles. You listen to some Negroes, and you would clearly get the picture that whitey is the cause for every problem he's ever had or will have. Frankly, I think it's a waste of energy to even try to find who's wrong, who's right, I think the real question we're going to have to focus our attention to and apply our energy to is finding a solution, trying to find a workable solution to these problems. The big question, I think, is where are we today in America on the racial question? It's a very complex question, and I do not even have the slightest idea that what I'm about to say will sum it up. But broad and generally, as I see it, because of the international situations and perhaps some real goodwill and generosity, which I'm not too sold on, the American government, particularly the central government, the federal government, has taken the position of eliminating officially all sanctions from the systems of discrimination and segregation. It would be a wonderful thing if the people of America had made that same decision. But unfortunately, and I think I need cite no example because there are too many, the American people have not yet decided that they are ready for non-whites to be their equal. This has been shown in many ways and is being shown in many ways. The federal government does not run this country. The majority of people run this country. And whatever the majority of people decide is primarily what will be. But don't think that I'm saying that this thing is all one-sided, because we're going to get to the other side a little later. Making these official American policies a reality is the real question facing this country today. Frankly, too many Americans, especially whites, take the position that whatever they do for the racial problem, they are helping some Negro or some Puerto Rican or some Indian. I really see it just the other way around. I think that whatever is done is helping white people because they have the most to lose. And I think that primarily white America has to make one very simple decision. And that decision is whether or not they are willing and ready for non-whites to be an integral part of this society. The consequences of not making that decision, I think, are also equally clear. I think that the very security of this nation rests on the answer to that question. I think that the very threat to Western civilization and Christian civilization as a way of life, not just to mention as the dominant existing culture and civilization on the earth today, but its existence as any viable way of life is at stake. I think this, on what seems to me to be a simple basis of reality, All major wars in recorded history, certainly that we know about and read about, were wars that were fought between two Western Christian cultures vying for the leadership of the Western civilization. That is, they were wars between Persia and Sweden, between Russia and France, between France and England, between England and America, between Germany and America. So you see, it didn't really matter too much who won that war. You had Christianity reigning in Germany, just like in Italy, just like in America. Oh, it would have made some difference, certainly, to America who won the war. But to Western and Christian civilization, it didn't really matter too much. But I think the next war is going to be different. I think that the next war will be fought between two vying cultures, not an inter-war, inter-civilization war, but I think an outside civilization and culture that has grown to the point of challenge. And I believe that the only way for Western and American civilization to withstand the challenge to its existence is to bring all people into this society in its fullest meaning. Anything short of this, I think, will result in a weakened America and a weakened Western civilization to the extent that it will be defeated by an outside force. Now, I may be wrong. South Africa and the Deep South in America may be right. It may be that Western culture can still reign supreme and keep half of the people within its physical bounds in an inferior, virtually slavery position. This is the premise that South Africa works on. This is the premise that the white supremacists in Mississippi work on. And don't misunderstand, they're not hypocrites. They're not pseudo-liberals like some people. You see, we study and we brag about Roman history and Rome being the base of our thing. But when we talk about it up north, they don't mention that 90% of the people in Rome were slaves and Greece were slaves. But when they teach it in Mississippi, they teach that the only reason that you had a citizenship in Rome and in Greece that was able to enjoy this high standard was because they were doing it on the backs of these slaves. And they believe that that's the only way that you can have a high order, is to build it on top of another group of people. Now, I don't think that that's right, and even if I thought it was right, I would still fight to death against it because it's against my interests. I hope that all Americans are going to see it against their interests and are going to see the necessity of making America a place that everyone can become an integral part of on an equal basis with everyone else. I went a little long on that point, and I don't see a clock. Would you bring me your watch, please, because I want to save enough time for the... Thank you. The last point, I think, is the role of the different groups in this society. The role of the Negro, the role of the white. I used to talk about the white role first because it was shorter. But and I suppose that I'll continue that precedent at least for one more day. Primarily, the white role is to simply answer the question that I posed before, whether it is willing and ready for non-whites to be a part, an integral part of the society that they, by majority, dominate. Now, I think one thing is very key. I think that the political is very important. In a system such as ours, in a system where you have a political democracy, no one who does not fully participate in the elective system can ever expect to gain all that there is to be had in this type of a society. Therefore, the non-white in America is going to have to participate fully in the elective system. Two things have to happen before he can do that. Number one is the system has to adapt itself to the full participation of all of its citizens. And our whole system has been one of adaptation. In the early days, only the very rich and the big landholders could vote. Then they extended it to the little landholders, then to people that had so much money, and then to men in general. I shouldn't say that. To white men in general, and then to white women in general, and now, in the last few years, officially, although not actually, to the non-whites in general, filling out the pattern that everybody is by right, legally, able to participate in the elective system. But the reality has to be adjusted to this ideal situation. Secondly, and of no less importance, the Negro is going to have to learn politics in the American fashion. Negro or racial politics in America to this day has been a hybrid politics, something that was built off to the side. It's a token politics, to say the least. The Negro has never had to participate in the racking of the brain and the mind to make choices. We're not used to this. But we are going to have to learn this system and adjust to it if we are to fully participate in the elective system, which is a prerequisite to a full enjoyment of the rights and privileges that are available in this type of a society. On the Negro side, there are other things that of very great importance. We know about most of the things. We know about the lack of opportunity. We know that the Negro college graduate makes less than the high school white graduate. We know all of these things. We know that the unions are closed. I understand that they let a Negro in the electrical union in Detroit recently, and it was headline news. That's a pity. It's an insult. We know about all these things. But there are some other things that are very critical in the Negro world. There's a great shortage of manhood. A great shortage of manhood. The percentage, thank you. I hope you all understand that I didn't like that. Negro manhood. The percentage of Negro women over Negro men who are educated in this country is amazing, to say the least. And I read a report from Negro college presidents recently that the picture is changing drastically in the same direction. In very plain terms, our women don't have anybody to marry. And that is a serious problem, a very serious problem. Now, we understand the reasons why, but that's not enough. We've got to be able to put money in the Negro's pocket and a man in every Negro home. Unless America can do that, we all are going to be weakened by it. I had a lot more I was going to say about that subject before I was a little disturbed. I guess now that I'm in politics, I'm going to have to stop being disturbed about little things like that. Well, you have been a very kind audience. And I can tell by your attention that I haven't spoken on some of the subjects that you may be more interested in. So since you've been so nice, I'll stop here and we can spend the rest of the time in exchanges between us. I thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Meredith. We'll now have a question period, as he mentioned. If any of you can think of anything you want to say, because of the television lights, I can't see you out there. So please stand up and then speak very loudly, because it's quite large and acoustics are bad. Yes?
I have a question. First of all, I'd like to ask, not too sure on the Joe Pine Show, not too long ago.
The question was asked if Mr. Meredith is on the Joe Pine Show.
I didn't see the show. What's your question?
And what is the other one?
You know, I didn't understand what he
Speak
said.
Louder yet.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I understand. Is that you finished?
Yeah.
I understand your question perfectly. And I want to tell you something. That was very deliberate. Because Negroes have been getting their satisfaction out of another Negro cussing white folks too long. And I don't see nothing to gain by cussing white folks. You understand? Everything I ever told anybody I was going to do, I did. I ain't never got up and talked about what I'm going to do and all that old talk and wasn't going to do nothing, Chief. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Now, I think the time is past for Negroes to get their satisfaction out of defying white folks when it ain't gaining them nothing.
Okay, is there another question? We have a mic here, so why don't you come down and speak into the mic? That way we won't have to
Yeah, that's
a lot.
Good idea. That's a good idea. I'd like to say some more on this question to this fella. I'll tell you what I had a fella to say to me the other night. He said to me, I'm a pacifist, but you know, somebody ought to shot that fella that shot you in Mississippi. I said, well, Frail, why don't you go shoot him?
Mr. Meredy, well, will there ever be an erasure piece here in America? If so, how?
Are you finished?
How? If so, how?
If so, how? Well, from the trend that we have had of late, maybe not. But if there's no racial peace in America, I don't believe that there's going to be an America too long. And how? I think that we are going to have to first understand the problem. Emotionalism, stereotype has dominated the question. And I think it's time that we looked at it with clear eyes. And I think the Negro should look at it with clear eyes. More importantly, I think the white should. See what's involved. I think that there are going to be far less reasons for whites to be throwing stones and mobbing and like they do when a Negro moves into the community, if they really study the situation and understand what's involved. And I think that they're going to have to do this. Now, I'm pretty sure of another thing. America not only has to worry about being able to utilize the resources of the minorities, that is, to utilize them in production and in fighting battles, but also, at some point, if there's any pride and any ounce of pride in the Negro, at some point, he's going to not only stop supporting a system that never will give him anything, but he's going to start to opposing it. And frankly, I would not want to see this happen. I don't think it should happen. I think that if the American people will listen and think, I think we can see this racial problem and the issues involved, and I think we can come to a solution. Well, I think that we're going to have to be democratic. We're going to have to be democratic. I think that gentleman asked a question already.
Do you think that the recent dismissal of Adam Clayton Powell from his position was because of the racial issue? Do you think this had overtones in it, or do you think he was dismissed by the representatives not following the committee recommendation because there was so much pressure brought to bear on them by the American public and letters to the congressmen and so forth?
Well, I don't know anybody that there's a question in their mind, but there's definitely no question in my mind that the dominating issue and the predominant reason why the action that was taken against Adam Powell was taken was the racial issue. I think that there's no question about it, and I haven't really seen anyone that denied that that wasn't the real thing. It was the American white people, the majority of American whites, reacting to their congressmen, and their congressmen reacting to their reactions. I think there can be no question about that.
By running against Adam Clayton Powell, do you expect to get accepted by the white man more, or what? I mean, why not run against Bobby Baker or Charles Percy or somebody?
Well, I don't pick them. I will say this, and this is what I meant earlier about Negro and racial politics in this country. No one in this country has an automatic right to any congressional seat or any other elective posts in this country. And I'm not sure the Negro quite realizes that.
As long as we're on the subject, upon what are you going to base your campaign, and what do you feel your chances are?
I'm not going to discuss this outside of the election district itself. I think this is an issue that's a primary concern to the voters in that district, and I think that's what should be discussed.
Don't you feel that the Negro, in his plight to gain unity, has too many chefs in one pot?
You know, would you repeat that? I didn't hear.
I say, do you feel that the Negro, in his plight to get...
In his what?
In his plight.
Plight?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
To gain unity, has too many chefs in one pot.
Too many what in one
pot? Chefs.
Chefs.
Oh, look here, boy, you've been up here too long. I get your point, though. I get your point. Look, let's face reality. There ain't never been no such thing as unity like what they're talking about. It is not possible in America. Now, they talked about having a meeting about Adam Clayton Powell, and the first reason they gave for not having it was that too many people wanted to come. And then they finally canceled it permanently, and I don't know what reason they gave for that. Now, everybody think that it's completely legitimate for Kennedy and Johnson to fight. Now, I mean, nothing. The whole security of America is involved in this fight. But we all think it's a perfectly legitimate thing. But Negroes, and we all know it's a lie, we have to try to pretend that something is that ain't. And I think it's time for us to stop pretending.
Do you think that the Democratic Party is going to find that it can no longer count on the support the Negroes have given it in the past? And do you think that your running for office on a Republican ticket will help the Negroes to find...
Will help the Negro find what?
To help the Negroes find that the Democratic Party has taken advantage of their vote for the last 60 years?
Yeah, but I can't... I didn't understand this question.
I said, do you think that the Negroes in this country are beginning to realize that the Democratic Party has taken advantage of their vote?
Well, I don't think I don't even think that's an issue. We got bad Democrats, we got bad Republicans.
Well, it is an issue, sir, because it's been shown that the Negroes have supported candidates in office on the Democratic ticket.
Since Roosevelt's time, before that time, they reported all Republicans.
We've all heard the term black power, and I'd just like to know how you feel on this subject. What do you feel about black power? What it
black
is
power?
To you?
The meaning yes. of black power?
Yes.
Well, during the great debate about black power, I never had any occasion to try to define it, and I think now that it's not in its high peak, it probably has no purpose. Frankly, I really saw black power as a power structure trick to keep the Negro confused. Because black power is a word that means nothing. And it can mean everything. It can mean anything that anybody wants it to mean. So consequently, the trick was this. If you could get the Negro to talking, trying to define black power, he would never know what it was he wanted, and he could never get together and get it. That was the whole purpose of black power. Yes, sir.
There's a lot of talk around about Uncle Toms and everything. In other words, satisfied Negroes. I was wondering if I could find your views on Uncle Tom or satisfied Negro.
Well, that's a very good question. Now, I'll tell you what. During one of the bigger demonstrations at Jackson State College, during the demonstrations that led to the real consequences of the Freedom Rider movement in Mississippi, where they had the dogs and everything. Well, one of the professors there explained a thing to me that has been with me ever since. And he explained it like this. He was a PhD from one of the big 10 universities. He's making something like $7,000 teaching at Jackson State College, a Negro school, where you had to be, by some people's description, an Uncle Tom to do it. Now, his proposition was this. He said he had a choice. He had offers for up to 3 times as much money to come teach at some northern school, some predominantly white northern school. And he said he had to make this decision in his mind, whether he would go away, retain all of his own personal thing that he wanted, or whether he would accept what he had to accept and stay there and do what he could. Now, that's really a sacrifice for a man to make. When a man can make $20,000 a year, but he instead, he takes $7,000 a year, suffer indignation, so he can help people who couldn't go away like he could go away. Now, these are very serious questions that our people have to ask. For that reason, I've never used the term Uncle Tom, Nervous Nelly, and all of that, because you've got to be fair to people. So you think about the position that this professor was in, and I think you can answer your own question.
Sir, how can the Negro attain total equality in the North, or is it possible?
I don't know what's the matter, but I didn't get you.
How can the Northern...
I think you all stand a little too close to the mic.
How can the Negro in the North...
That's better.
...attain total equality?
Uh-huh. Well... Frankly, that's very largely up to the majority group. Now, the Negro may be able to wreak a lot of destruction, but 10 Negroes are not going to ever physically make 100 whites do anything, particularly when the whites got all of the facilities that make people do things.
I can't quote your exact words at the beginning of the speech, but you were talking about Maddox and some of the other people who are running.
About
can you
what?
Hear me?
Yeah, about
who
what?
Are running, you know, in politics. And you said that it's not the person who says anything, but the ones who are doing the things. Well, why are you running up here instead of down there?
Up where instead of down here?
Up in the North instead of in the South.
You're going to make me hurt your feelings, sugar.
You don't seem to care. So
because look at here. Where did your daddy come from? Where was he born?
He was born in the South, too.
I know it.
He did in the South, too.
So you're mad at the wrong folks. You see, the Negro, 25 years ago, lived in the South. Today, the Negro lives in the urban areas of the North and the West. I have 9 brothers and sisters, 3 in Detroit, been there at least 25 years. I have 50 times more relatives in Michigan than I got in Mississippi, and 150 times more in Chicago than I got in Mississippi. Reality is a thing that Negroes are going to have to get used to.
I'd like to know,
since we've had so many sit-ins and lie-ins and walk-ins and walk-outs and ins and outs, and all of these things are beginning to, they're getting to be old stuff now, and they're losing their effectiveness. And we can't go on to violence. This is completely out. Now, I want to know, what in the world can we do that's going to be effective without being violent so we can get moving again?
Yeah. Well, that's the best question, I think, of the day. My belief is that we've got to move into the political arena of this country on the same basis that the general society involved in this subject of politics. I think that, as I said before, in a political democracy, no one who does not fully participate in the elective system can never fully enjoy all of the rights and privileges that exist under that system. And in order for the Negro to get his fair share, even if he has all of his rights, he's got to have his political influence, because this country is run by the political.
Mr. Meredith, sir, on what basis do you feel qualified to run for representative to the Congress of the United States?
Well, I think that's a decision for the people in the 18th Congressional District.
I mean, what basic qualities? Have you run for
an
office?
I think that's a decision for the people in the 18th Congressional District.
Sir, you had stated earlier that unless we didn't recognize individuality
in the American... I don't think they can hear you.
Unless we didn't recognize individuality in the American white and the American Negro, our country could split. But if our country does not divide itself, I would like to know how you feel, or who do you feel will make up the American society, say 20 to 50 years from now, the American white, the American Negro, or do you see a future for both of them?
What do you mean, who will make up the society?
I would like to know who you feel that in our future years, say 50 years from now, who will determine our culture and society and be predominantly strong in the country, the American white, the American Negro, or do you really feel sincere that you see a future for both of them?
I think that there has to be a future for both. We won't even be talking in terms of neither one being strong. I think somebody else will be strong.
Mr. Meredith, you shouldn't have any problem understanding me. I'm from the great state of North Carolina. My question is, if the Negro is accepted into what you term the white man society, is the Negro able and willing to take on responsibilities that this society asks for?
I didn't. You say, is the liberal able? What do you mean?
Beg your pardon?
Is the liberal able to take on this?
No. Is the Negro willing to take on the responsibilities that the white man's society asks for?
Well, I don't know if I can recognize a white man's society.
You use this term.
I'm talking now. You've asked your question. I don't think I can recognize a white man's society anywhere, especially if I'm living there. I think this has to be our society, and I think we have to make the rules.
Who's we, the Negro or the white?
I think we have to be democratic. I've answered your question.
You haven't answered a decent question here all day.
We have time for just two more questions.
Mr. Meredith, I just wanted to ask you one question. In the middle of your lecture, right here? Yeah. In the middle of your lecture, you said that it was America's responsibility to put man, the Negro manhood, in the family. I don't quite understand that. Isn't it really the man's responsibility to make his own manhood? I don't...
Well, did you say that I said that it was the Negro woman's responsibility?
No, I understood you to say that in your lecture. You said that it is America's responsibility to put a Negro to make the man feel a man.
Right, and you think it should be whose responsibility?
The man himself.
The Negro man himself?
That's right. I don't understand. You know.
Yes. Well, I think you are absolutely right. I mean, unless the Negro man is willing to stand up and be a man, then of course he can never be. But also, I think we must realize that in order for the Negro man to really be a man, he has to be able to get a decent job so he can take care of his family so they can respect him. And these type things. So actually, it has to be a participation on the part of all America. And I think it would be placing too much of a burden upon the Negro man, being that he's in the weakened position he's in, to demand that he bear all of the burden. Now, also, I think the Negro woman has a burden, for the simple reason that the Negro woman in America is the dominant segment of the Negro community. She really, in effect, runs the community. So, consequently, she has to have the responsibility of seeing that the Negro male gets his lesson properly, get an opportunity, and is advised properly. So the responsibility is the Negro man, the American society, and the Negro woman.
Mr. Meredith, a little while ago, somebody asked you a question about Adam Clayton Powell and whether you felt that this was a racial issue or not. And you said you had never met anyone yet who didn't feel that the primary reason in Powell's dismissal was the racial issue. Well, you've met one now. Mr. Meredith.
I'm proud of you.
Mr. Meredith.
I'm proud of you because the people hearing that applaud won't know that it was for you and not for me, see?
Mr. Meredith.
They think it was for me. Well, I want to answer your question.
It wasn't a question. I'll phrase it now.
Oh.
Not really a question. I'd like you to comment on what I'm going to say. It seems to me that when a congressman or anyone in our national government is... no matter if he's a Negro or a white person or Puerto Rican or Chinese or anything, seems to me that if he is using funds improperly, if he is misrepresenting his people, if his people don't really know what is going on, it seems to me no matter who it is, this person should be disciplined. Now, our Constitution provides that the Senate and the House discipline their own members, and I feel the House did the best thing possible. And now the argument is brought up that that they're just picking on Powell alone. Well, there's this Senator Long that is being investigated. And, well, anyway, you comment on that.
Well, frankly, I was looking for you to come out when I made that statement. And I see that you speak for a lot of people. I hope you're right. I hope that's true. Because this white fella that was the television cameraman that was in the brawl with the Negro yesterday seemed rather hurt. And he really wanted to fight because the Negro accused him of being acting the way he did because he was Negro. Now, if there is this lack of understanding, if our language or our circumstances leave this gap between us, where we don't really understand one another, where we don't really know what one or the other means, then I think that now is the time for us to understand so that we won't have to operate on these emotional bases and these irrational considerations. Actually, my mind is open on the question, and I hope you're right, although I still do not believe you're right. I hope you're right, and I would like to see an atmosphere where we can determine where you're right, whether you're right. And I think this is the whole thing that I'm hoping for. Was that the...
That's all we have time for. Mr. Meredith has a very busy schedule, and so he's got to keep moving right along today. He has to get out to Aquinas. It's a little after 11, so you'll have time to get back to your 11 o'clock class, I'm afraid. But we do want to thank Mr. Meredith for his...
I want to say something more before you set me down. I'm sorry that, of course, this program is not under my control. So the time is up. I wish I could answer everybody's question. And thank you. Now, I hope that one thing is understood here today, if nothing else. I think that we are going to have to start seeing America as America is and recognizing things exactly as they are. Now, I could have came here today and I could have said things that would please everybody. Don't think I don't know what to say to please people. I know what to say to please Negroes. I know what to say to please whites. But I think it would be a disservice. And I think it would be a disservice to all of us if we keep pleasing one another and not getting at the substance and the issues that we're involved in, so we can come to some conclusions. I thank you very much. And although some may not get the idea, but this has been one of the best audiences I've ever had the privilege of speaking to. And I thank you very much.
We thank you, Mr. Meredith.